What's the title of this thing? No title again?
So you speak about what you call the conversational nature of reality in various places. What do you mean by that?
Well, it just seems very obvious to me. Whatever a human being desires for themselves will not come about exactly as they first imagined it or first laid it out in their minds. Equally, whatever the world desires of you will not happen, no matter how coercive that world is. What always happens is the meeting between what you desire from your world and what the world desires of you. It's this frontier where you overhear yourself and you overhear the world. And that frontier is the only place where things are real. That to me is the conversational nature of reality. And the discipline is to stay on that frontier as fully as you can.
Does that relate in your mind to this opposition you sketched in the poem, the distinction between, you know, hearing the summons of the bell and
yes.
going in to work on yourself and improve
yeah.
your craft and prepare, rehearse,
yes.
and not yet to enter the world, but,
yeah.
you know, as opposed to actually trying your gifts such as they are in public and for better or worse?
Yeah, it's lovely relief, actually, to realize you don't get to choose.
Mm.
You always have to rehearse. You always have to deepen. You always have to practice. You always have to find the next level of generosity in your being or your soul. And you must meet the world just as it finds you now, too, with whatever you've got.
Right.
And I think once you actually follow that frontier conversation, the conversation itself actually starts to deepen you. And after a while, you realize, well, I don't need to do the work. I just need to be in that exchange, in that meeting place. In many ways, that's the way my career has gone. It's only a career in looking back. It's a kind of frontier, otherwise, in which you just try to keep a kind of integrity.
Feed that out. That, of course, is the Sam Harris podcast, Making Sense. And, my God, I love it, and I wish I could understand a fraction of what they get into. There's always something deep there, and you puzzle over it. All right, so let's officially start the Dixon James podcast. I do like to start with other clips, and they're not just random. Like that one I went back for and said, okay, this part, I think there might be something here, but maybe you'll understand it better than I will. But on to the Dixon James podcast. Good day. It is Wednesday. It's about 3:30 in the afternoon. This would be February the 5th. And I'm in Buffers Park. Excuse me. I have not been here for a long time, it seems. And it was on the way home, more or less, from my last falls prevention clinic session. I signed up for a total of 8 sessions. And today was the last one. And they sort of put you through the same test they gave you the day you started. They have a scale of things, just asking you to stand up unassisted and one foot in front of the other, walk this distance, bend, pick this up, get out of one chair and onto another, a variety of things, you know, trying standing on one foot, which I can't do. And so anything below 49 out of 56 means you're in danger of falling. And, you know, that's like a normal person could do probably 56 out of 56. These are not difficult tasks. So when I first came here 8 weeks ago, I got 33 out of 56, which was quite low. I left today with 45 out of 56. So some things I was able to do better, but still within the range of being having to be extra careful. She did say something that alarmed me a little bit. I had given her the results of my MRI, and I haven't had a chance to follow up with my doctor yet, or even much time with a neurologist. And she went over one piece and thought, well, you know, we're still trying to figure out why you have this balance issue, why you can't walk one foot straight in front of the other, or balance, or whatever, that you just get wobbly. And I say it's like my gyroscope, it's broken. There's no center of gravity. And, you know, we're trying to rule out, is it diabetes related? Not necessarily. Is it just neuropathy and you know, the fact I don't have proper sensations in both my feet? Yes, sorry, this is the health update. And she said, well, you did have that TIA, this is a mini stroke 4 years ago, and it could be connected to that. And she's not a specialist, and of course I will have to talk this over with others, but that would suggest, you know, this could be permanent damage. I mean, the results from today showed, no, if I practice, I can maybe get better, and if I do a lot of exercises, but it's a real thing. It's a real thing, the fact that I just... So little things, like I'm looking ahead at me, there's always a great view. I used to climb up on these rocks right at the edge of Lake Ontario that I'm facing now. You'd climb up to get a better picture, you know, make your way down the rocks to maybe get a seat and sit on the rock right by the water's edge. I couldn't do that now. It would be too dangerous. I could not sort of lift my left leg up just to get on that first rock. So that kind of sucks, you know, but the thing is, and I know it probably doesn't sound true if I say this, but I don't care, or I don't care now, I guess, because, well, I don't have to do that, you know, so if I can't do it, fine, you know. Oh, I don't know. I mean, again, I look backwards and I look at all the things I've done. I'm grateful for each and every one of them. And looking forward, if there are fewer things that I can do, well, that's fine. You adjust. So that part, I don't know. But God, yo, here we go again. Damn. Change topic, change topic. It's always about me, isn't it? Listen, a lot's happened. My son got a promotion. I know I don't talk about my children much on this podcast because basically they're kind of very private and they wouldn't want me to. But he did get a promotion, but one of the conditions on the first day, he had to fill in for somebody. And that meant starting at 4:30 in the morning for his shift at the airport. So, of course, I was up at 3:30 driving him. And I enjoyed it. Like, it's amazing. I made it home from the airport, from Terminal 1 to my driveway in 25 minutes. Like, that's, it wasn't that I wasn't doing 140, I was doing 100, 110, maybe 120 at times, but whatever. Just no traffic at 4 in the morning, 3 in the morning. So that was a nice change. But, of course, it means I'm tired today, and I'm as tired when I went through these exercises, and I've been doing my daily exercises twice a day. I'm doing it for my, in preparation for the knee replacement Monday. And of course, it just aggravates the knee. It's swollen, it aches, it hurts more, and it seems, hey, is that really what it's supposed to be? But yeah, I'm really working on the muscles by doing these exercises. Shit! Lift up that needle, drop it in a different groove. We keep saying that, and I keep finding it so hard to do. I guess I am preoccupied. She asked me, she said, are you a little nervous about your treatment? I think Shane in... Shane Pompvan Windsor asked me the same today, and I'm sort of saying, well, I'm kind of a little bit in, not denial, but I'm trying not to think too much about it. But I sort of am. I mean, it's, holy fuck, what do? They cut open your knee and they pull out a piece, or they put in another piece? What do they cut? I really don't know exactly what they do, but I see there's a new joint that goes in there. Well, how the fuck... So I guess I could look it up, but I guess maybe there's a part of me, I just don't want to. I know they know what they're doing, but I am concerned with the after effects, and I am thinking more on the way here. I actually detoured through West Haven Memorial Gardens, which is a cemetery just on the other side of Kingston Road. This Bluffers is at Kingston and Brimley, and I always, you know, this is what I've said, oh, if I had a memorial, this would be a good place to put a bench. But I think if I was going to be have a spot in a cemetery, it would be Rest Haven, because it's just across the road close by. And, of course, I want to be cremated, but do you not have, like, a little place people can go to say hello and, you know, pour a bit of beer onto the ground or something? So that's clearly in my mind, and I've been thinking, oh, for the past few weeks, man, I got to make an appointment and plan my funeral. So that my wife doesn't have to do anything. It's just, bam, here's the guy, just call this number. They'll take care of everything. So I went with that purpose, and I realized, no, this is just really the funeral grounds. This isn't for the actual service and so on. So that will be done. I made an effort about, talked about digging out closets By the way, you don't have to be listening, right? You know that I'm going to drone on much the same way, full of things in my life that aren't exciting, that aren't going to teach you anything new, that aren't really entertaining. You're not going to hear another voice. So seriously, no hard feelings. You just stop. Go spend your time more wisely. If this is not your cup of tea, find something that is. Okay. Well, that was like an ad, right? Kind of a negative ad, but... So I want to plan all that out. I talked with John Meadows and talked about the idea, you know, this new vision of your body is sort of put into a bag with earth and the roots of a tree, and you're just sort of planted in the ground, and you're decomposed, and I guess eventually you're nourishing those roots and so on. You become part of that tree in through the decomposition. I don't know where they offer that. I don't think it's widely spread just yet. And it might be, who knows, remote forest somewhere that people would never visit. But that's a nice idea, too. I don't think anything local here in Scarborough would be up to speed with that. So I am thinking about those things. I did go through a closet and found my old slides, and there are hundreds, like 100 at a time in a box, and there must be 15 boxes. Going back to my trip to Europe in 69, and some of them, there's just a few out of every 100. Maybe there's only 5 or 6 that I'd really want a copy of. And I had done it before. I bought a slide scanner many years ago. Well, damn it. Wouldn't you know, with the new operating system on the Macintosh, this slide scanner doesn't work. Oh, well, you just download this driver. And I went through the list, and almost every model except mine with the new Mac OS is not available. If I had an older operating system or a slightly newer slide scanner, and this was a nice one that I bought. So I've been going crazy looking, oh my God, one of these things, I need a slide scanner. And then you think, well, you just buy a cheap one. And if you're going to, you're going to be disappointed and they don't do a good job. Well, geez, do you really want to invest hundreds in a new one for, 20 slides maybe that you want to scan? And if you get around to it, and then what happens to that? You know, does that get out of date? And meanwhile, what do you do with this piece of hardware you have that's a perfectly functioning? It works. The lights went on. It just couldn't communicate with the computer. It just seems such a waste. So anyway, I dug under the drawer then after that and pulled out my old, what do you even call those little cameras? They used to be, a Hi8 Super Sony hand camcorder. I had a real old one that I paid $2,000 for. Oh, my God, I shudder to think of that. But basically, these are the days when I had the company, Canadian Study Tours, or Carincha Canada, and anything I wanted, I would just buy it for the company needed it. You know, we got to make movies, so the company would pay this money. So it's not, didn't hurt as much. So then I bought a newer one, which was backwards compatible with the old analog cassettes, these little 8mm things, and works, of course, the new digital versions. But how to get those movies onto a hard drive or onto a USB stick, I haven't figured out yet. And that's something else. And I played a few from Kawasaki when my son was just born, 1 year old, and they're really quite wonderful to see this little boy who is now 30 in Thailand, as a 1.5 year old, walking around our little compound. We lived in a beautiful little place. And then later when the second son was born, the fellow I was up at 3:30 for this morning. And then when we both moved to, or the whole family moved to Toronto in 1993, 94, I guess, when they were... when they were 4 and 6, so that would have been 1996, videos from there. And to see them as children with a little bit of accent still, and just very cute and playing. I think, well, those are precious. You've got to save that. You can't just, plug in this video camera and watch it on the little screen. Yeah, you can hook it up to your TV, but how to get a digital copy? And so... In other words, my attempt to go into a closet and start cleaning things out only sent me in so many other directions, you know, an hour, spent hours really trying to find drivers for an old scanner and then reading about the specs on the new scanners and how much they cost and who had the best deal and you know, and meanwhile, in reality, in one sense, nothing is done, you know. Slides are back in the box, the 8mm cassette videos are back in a box under the desk. So life gets busy. Listen, if you're complaining about this, I'll tell you right now, I had three recordings I made last Sunday when I was at the Only Cafe. After half a gummy bear, after three pints, and after a toke, and I decided after listening that I will not share any of them with you. It really was my Timothy Leary rule. He said, if you write straight, edit stoned. If you write stoned, edit straight. And I've always said that same goes for podcasting. If you podcast stoned, edit straight, or at least listen through and decide. And if you podcast straight, edit stoned, and you might find, hey, I got something good here. So that's what will happen. I mean, I'll listen back to this. And right now, as I'm doing it, I'm thinking of the listener and how boring all this is. But when I go back and listen, say, hey, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. I'm just being authentic. And it's what this guy said at the beginning, the joining of now, the world, whatever it needs now, and wherever I'm at now, this is the best I can do. This is it. This is my reality now. Now, that sort of... Yeah, no, we're just gonna leave that. I guess maybe we'll end right here now. I don't know that. excuse me, I'm a little concerned about this. Well, I'm not. I mean, the whole world is concerned about this coronavirus. I mean, virus. I'm thinking of these two huge cruise ships, like with 3,000 passengers on, one in Hong Kong, where nobody can get off because crew members were exposed to the virus by somebody else, and another one off Japan. And they can't let these people off. And you think, holy fuck, they're going to run out of food. The people who are sick on, like, it's the one that's in Hong Kong, they can't allow those people to serve other food to other people. And these are huge. And meanwhile, our plane is delayed. We're trying to get people out of Wuhan province, Canadian. So this is what's happening February 5th, 2020 in the news. This coronavirus out of Wuhan province in China, where so far there's only one person who's died outside China, and that was in the Philippines, but that guy traveled all over. It's amazing. Like this, you know, to say, whoa, I've talked sometimes about the organization of my fellow humans. That takes a lot to have a ship and say, no, you can't dock. Nobody's getting off, but we will send on doctors and we will test every single one of you. But meanwhile, you are all in isolation. Nobody's going anywhere just in case. That is quite amazing. Meanwhile, Donald Trump gave a State of the Union address. The Democratic Party, oh my God, you're looking worse and worse. I'm starting to cheer for Pete, Mayor Pete. He's getting a little traction. Certainly did in Iowa anyway. Seems like an awfully nice guy. I think with the America, it's sort of hard. I couldn't imagine Trump actually getting into the White House. And it's equally hard to imagine Mayor Pete and his husband, or his, you know, partner, moving into the White House. But damn it, why not? Wouldn't that be exciting? Sorry, we skipped the women on this one. I know it's your turn, but meanwhile, let's go a step further and have a gay president of the United States. My God, are they ready for that? I'm still a Bernie man to the core, but he's too old, and he can't win against. And there's a chance he won't win against. And of course, they just throw the dirty socialist word at him, and that's that. But if you can get his supporters behind Mayor Pete or somebody else and say, okay, now these are some of the things we really want you to institute, you know, like healthcare and cheaper university education and so on. Come on, guys, do it. But according to Trump last night, hey, who would want to change presidents? Everything is tickety-boo in the States right now. Everything is doing better than ever. We've made America great, and we're going to continue to make it greater if you vote me in again. And the Republicans are behind that. I guess what disgusted me was the, what's his name, that horrible, horrible evangelical preacher, Rush Limbaugh, talk show host, being given this award distinction. You know, he's dying of cancer. Well, we're going to give it to him right now on TV in the middle of a State of the Union address. My wife is going to pin this on you right now with the television cameras going around the world in the middle of my State of the Union address. And then some poor guy who was a drug addict and lost his home and lost his wife and family, and we got him on a program and he rehabilitated himself and started his own company, and we gave him a chance, and now look at him. Here he is all dressed up in a suit and tie. And that was just a painful moment to watch the camera zoom in on him. So all that show, which is so very American, I use the word disgusting, and I'm going to end right there on that note. So thanks for listening. I know this was a lot, but man, I consider that I erased three, or didn't erase, I just not including three full clips that I recorded last Sunday when I was stoned. And so you get this instead. Scarborough Dude, signing out from Scarborough Bluffers Park. Bye for now.
In every other song that I've heard lately, some fellow gets shot, and his baby and his best friend both die with him, as likely as not. In half of the other songs, some cats cry, are ready to die. We've lost most all of our happy people, and I'm wondering why. Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey dovin'. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life. We lost old Marty Robbins down in El Paso a little while back. And now Miss Patty Page, or one of them, is a-wearing black. And Kathy's clown has Don and Phil where they feel like they could die. If we keep on losing our singers like that, I'll be the only one you can buy. Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying and the shooting and the dying and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life. Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying and the shooting and the dying and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life. Let's think about living. Let's think about life. Let's think about living. Let's think about life. Let's think about living.
Oh no, the chicken is frozen. Oh my gosh, he barely squeaks. Oh, I'm so sorry. I left him in the car overnight and it's cold. All right, that means we're on. That's like a big flashing neon sign, on air. And that's what where we are right now. Thompson Park, I heard this mentioned yesterday. There was a news item about Scarborough. Somebody had done a huge kind of mural celebrating Scarborough, all the places. And it was kind of neat to see so many of the places that I often talk about. Thompson Park being one of them, and of course, Bluffers would have been there, and it was just, you know, a reminder to people, hey, Scarborough is a really great place. And I really feel a little badly that anybody who maybe, you know, Googling Scarborough, Ontario, found this podcast, Scarborough Dude, oh, it must be about Scarborough, and then finding out, no, it's all about me and not much else. And that's got to be a bit of a disappointment. But anyway, Speaking of me, after I recorded that clip yesterday from my other place, from Bluffers Park, on the way home, I made a U-turn and dropped in at the local funeral home, the McDonald, is it McDonald? Yeah, McDougal and Brown Funeral Home, part of a big franchise. It's one where my wife has been many times for when people that she's worked with have passed on, and where the very, very good friend of my son when he was 16 died and they had the service there. So I'm familiar with it, and anybody who listened to this podcast, maybe 300, 400 episodes ago, would have heard me struggling with the fact I don't want to be buried in Toronto or Scarborough. Like, no, this is not my home. And I'm very happy to say that, wow, that's long past. This is my home. It's been my kids' home. It's been my wife's home for a long time. And, yeah. So I've even, yeah, I stopped by on the way there. I mentioned the funeral burial grounds, I guess, you know, and where, okay, if I was going to have a marked place, it'd be there, which is very close to this funeral home, and then went in to talk to somebody about pre-planning a funeral. Like, really, it's on my mind, and I'm sure it's all driven by the surgery I'm going to have in just a few days. It's eating at me. And I think yesterday's session, oh my God, here we go. Warning, health issues. I got a bit of a scare when, from the sounds of it, oh, okay, it could be related to that stroke, meaning it's not going to go away. This balance thing is maybe a lifelong condition. I'm not trying to over-dramatize here or look for self-pity. I'm, again, the Dixon James podcast is... There's not many Dicks, there's not many Janes. It's me, Scarborough Dude, talking to himself. I probably should rename this. Just trying to come to terms with a lot. Like, why have I really... Like, I'm really thinking more and more about dying and sort of not being ready. And I don't mean spiritually. I just mean in practical terms. I just don't want to burden my wife. So I picked up this package my God, I've got a paper open now on planning beforehand. Plan now, who to notify when death occurs. So it's got vital information and documents. It's 30 of those. Holy shit, I don't have those together. Like health insurance, pensions, life insurance, property deeds, all these things, automobile, marriage license, stuff that my wife would need access to. The second one, personal choices, final wishes, you know, and that's what I'm starting to work on now. Okay, well, I want to be cremated, and I think this is a nice house, and it's in a nice funeral home, and it's in Scarborough, and it would be, they can do gatherings, and, you know, I talked about open coffins, and you rent the coffin. It's pretty, still pretty damn expensive when you go through all this shit, but that's fine. But those are decisions that have to be made, you know. Choosing music, readings, if any. My gosh, decorative elements and inscriptions. And I was thinking, look, you know, I kind of like a bench with my name on it. But he said, oh, we don't really do that. I don't even know where you go. And I'd say, I know where I go. It's the city of Toro, city of Scarborough. But there's waiting list for that, and it's something that could come after the fact, if anything. Mainly, I guess the other issue is, well, where do you scatter the ashes? Do you keep them in an urn for a while? They hang around the house? Or do you get rid of them? And when I mentioned the business about, you know, your body wrapped in a burlap sack and becoming, biodegrading for the tree to eat up, he would say, well, I mean, there's some people who will plant a tree and then scatter the ashes around the tree. And, oh, okay, that's, you know, that makes sense. So having a tree with your name on it, maybe that's, you know, that's a good possibility. And then responsibilities at time of death, you know, setting times for visitation, inform and instruct the pallbearers. Jesus, do you need pallbearers? Are you going to go anywhere? And already I'm thinking, man, there's a lot of decisions to make here. And if you're not going to be, you know, put in a have your urn put in a place, and you really don't need this, you know, procession with all the cars driving down, you know, Kingston Road from this funeral home to the place where the ashes are going to be put. You could do that on your own just some other time. So there's a lot. I mean, in other words, there's a lot of places where you could save money, too. I mean, you need all these things, you know. Pallbearers in their black suits and, you know, drivers in the cars. And it's a price list. And holy shit. They don't give sort of a here's a package deal. But metal urns other, you know, marble or wood. And the cost of those things, anywhere from $1,700 down to, what's our cheapest here? I don't know, a couple of $100, I guess. And you think, okay, well, maybe in an antique shop I could find something that might double as an urn. I don't know. Probably got something around the home. But so much, the catering, the services, retrieval of cremated remains, $150 for that. Cremated remains reclamation, refundable deposit. Yeah, when do you get those? So, I'll pay you for that. Just go get it and bring them back to my wife so she doesn't have to get them. But, you know, save $150. Hey, honey, would you mind driving out to Whitby? They got a nice crematorium there. And anyway, sorry. You can see what's going on with me. It's just, I guess I'm starting to feel sorry for myself. We had a rough morning. I drove my son again to work. So that was up at, you know, 3. And then last night it was snowing, so the visibility was bad and the roads weren't plowed. And I was finding it very stressful with the, the low visibility and, you know, high speed and 401 trucks roaring past you. And, of course, my son, I don't want him to feel bad that, you know, he's got his dad out of bed at 3 in the morning to drive him. But, of course, he's probably thinking that. So, and then my wife doesn't sleep. She hears everything and hears when he gets up to have his shower at 2:30. And so she's not sleeping but still has to get herself to work. And so, you know, a little bit of a difference of opinion today on him getting him there. And I'm saying, well, there are buses. He can take the bus. You know, it's 2 hours across town. You know, probably 120 stops, unless there's nobody on the bus but you at 2:30 in the morning. Oh, and he's kind of stuck with this shift. So that in itself has created tiredness and stress. And we're cheering him on. We're feeling for him. He's really working hard at this job, and he's doing everything to stay in everybody's good books at it and show, prove himself. And his girlfriend so kindly sent over a whole big tray of fruit, you know, like chocolate-covered bananas and all kinds of things. That was a congratulations on the day he was given the job. But now here he is. He's not going to have much of a social life left after this. But the argument was, well, now he can drive. Well, he's not comfortable driving the 401 yet. You know, he hasn't had the experience. And to get on it, you know, 3:30 in the morning, racing transport trucks in the middle of winter, it's not a good starting point. So I said, oh, well, there's another way. You can go Lawrence Avenue almost all the way. And so there's an argument about which car. I said, well, take the Toyota. My wife says, no, take her car. It's more reliable. And you know, when you're tired and you're stressed, there's bickering. And then I watched a movie today. It was on sort of in the background, but it was about the story about the pilot of the Enola Gay and how it had to be kept secret. The stress that it put on him and his family as he was holding on to a secret that even the other crew members didn't know they were going to drop an atomic bomb on one city over Japan. And today, for the first time that I remember, I heard that one of the choices was Niigata. And that's the city, or the state, what do you call them? States, where my wife is from. And I thought, wow, it was all weather dependent. Oh, it's clear over Hiroshima. Oh, well, they draw the short straw. And I thought, wow, if it had been Niigata, like the ripples that would have set literally in place, even though my wife wasn't born till 1962, There's a very good chance. Well, I mean, everything would be different. Everything would be different. And I wouldn't be married to her, and I wouldn't be having this particular conversation with you. I might not even be a podcaster. I mean, everything changes on all these things. And I don't know if that was about, you know, the opening clip from Sam Harris that started off this show about, you know, the conversations you have to engage with reality and then the world itself and it, how it engages with you. I don't know if there's a connection to that or not, but it's just, I mean, everything is beyond our control. So there's no real sense of, well, this is how it's supposed to be. Well, it is, because it can't be any other way given everything that happened previously. But it also almost suggests there's no meaning to anything at all. I hope you can hear this. I keep moving the mic away, and I've got it set on low sensitivity. How could there be meaning when everything is just sort of random collection, like my meeting this particular woman at that particular time in Yokohama, and you know, any other time our paths would not have ever crossed and would not have led to, you know, where we are now. And I guess it's been looking back at those pictures. So I don't know. I it's a time of reflection. I'm looking back to her. My God, when we first had our first son, she was, let's see, she's born 62. He was born 1990. How does that make? Well, that's not that young. But of course, we were married for a few years before the birth of our son. But she looked just so young, and my wife is a bit of a chameleon. She can look different in every picture, every for a while. Like, I mean, just like really different. And anyway, I don't know where we're going with this. It's called Getting Organized, 87 Decisions, Celebrating Live Special Moments. Oh shit, I guess that's all about the pictures you got to bring in. That's the other thing to do. You know, and there's another reason why maybe this ties in. Do I need a scanner? Because I want some of those pictures. But because, you know, here I am. I don't know when I'm going to die. Why am I thinking all this now? It is because I'm going in for surgery. And it just makes you think of, you know, hey, you are fragile. You are frail. You are the body. And that body, you know, has funny ways of putting you in your place. So, I don't know, maybe I should, I got shopping to do. Our poor outdoor cat, it snowed last night, it's cold, and he looks so ratty. And, you know, when the sun is shining, he's on the deck, and he's washing, and he's basking in the heat of the sun, and then he just disappears, and I don't know, he doesn't seem to be sleeping in his house anymore. Maybe there's something dead in there. He disappears somewhere. I know he knows where the vent is. My wife has put a table out over that, so there's a warm air vent from the house. And it may be that he's sleeping rough outside, but you just got to feel for him. So he comes around when he's hungry, and it's, you know, which is often. So I did give him warm milk for breakfast, and my other cat, my goodness, spent the whole night with me. I lay out an old pair of pajamas that she sniff around and think, oh, yeah, this is right. And I have just such a special bond with that cat. She's wild when she's outside. When she comes back in, her eyes are just huge. They're all just black eyes, and she just wants to fight. Like, she'll attack my bare ankle. She'll come at me, and she'll jump up and attack and swell. Like, it's just, there's a wildness that she's telling us, hey, I'm not just some pussycat here, I'm a wild creature. And then it takes her a while to calm down and become the pussycat again. I guess none of this is really of much interest to anybody. I was thinking, how dare you talk about your knee replacement when other friends you have dealt with the big C and turn their lives around, and you know, you've really got nothing to feel all that badly about. But I think I'm just being reminded. I think that's all. I think it's just driven the point home that, our frail nature. So I guess that's about it. Maybe I don't have anything to say about Mayor Pete becoming president. I was very happy to hear what's his name? You know, suddenly it goes when he just doing. I've been tweeting him, thanking him for that. You know, the guy who's adopted those other guys. He was a radio guy. He did shows. He does music. He's very talented. Lives in Florida during the winter. He's got a name. He's got probably a few names. Not even his real names. But anyway, you all, anybody, any listener to this probably has a pretty good idea who I'm talking about. So, yeah. Who's going to be the next president? And there's quite a few people thinking Trump. We'll be right back at it, and that's just kind of a frightening prospect of basically changing. Okay, it's a new world, and this is how we have to run the world, and this is the way we're going to do it, and all those old sort of democratic fair ways, maybe those days are past us. Okay, I have no right to be talking about American politics whatsoever. I got to go buy cat food and stuff and get on. And I do send a little bit of an apology for all of, I'm beginning to just sound so old, boring, and repetitious and just stuck on that track. I keep saying I got to lift up that track, you know, bam, drop it on another groove. And I just can't seem to get out of the one I'm in. But this will be my last podcast of all original parts. Because by the next time comes around, I will have had the knee replacement, and I don't know. I hope that I come out the other side. My wife sort of reminded me there are people who just take these turning points and get determined. They're just going to be better and stronger and more positive moving forward. And right now, I'm sort of doing the opposite to that, and that's not good. Is a chicken thawed? No. Poor guy. Yeah, okay. All right, I should take you in and let you warm up. It's quite a nice-looking guy, too. All right, Scarborough Dude signing off. I'll be back with one more clip and hopefully some music that you'll appreciate. But bear with me. That's all I ask. Bye for now.
Looks like somebody stole my glass and a drink out of the pitcher. Like I was saying a while ago, here's to a pitcher of beautiful water from the Horseshoe Tavern, of course. But it wasn't the shoe they drained it through, it was some other part of the horse. The bingo and the boys are getting stinko. We think no more of Inko on a Sudbury Saturday night. The glasses they will tinkle when our eyes begin to twinkle, and we think no more of Inko on a Sudbury Saturday night. With Irish Jim O'Connell there and Scotty Jack McDonald, there's hunky Frederick Herschel getting tight, but that's all right. There's happy German Fritzy there with Frenchy getting tipsy, and even Joe the Gypsy knows it's Saturday tonight. Nell and Marianne and Mabel come to join us at the table and tell us how the bingo went tonight. We'll look a fright, but if they win the money, we'll be laughing at the honey boys, cause everything is funny for it's Saturday tonight. Yeah, the girls are out to bingo and the boys are getting stinkle. They think no more of bingo on a Sudbury Saturday night. The glasses, they will tinkle when our eyes begin to twinkle. Come and think no more of bingo on a Sudbury Saturday night. Ah, play it, girl. We'll
drink the loot we borrowed and recuperate tomorrow. Cause everything is wonderful tonight, we had a good fight. We ate the dilly pickle and we forgot about the nickel. And everybody's tickled for it's Saturday tonight. The songs that we'll be singing, they might be wrong, but they'll be ringing. And all the lights of town are shining bright and we're all tight. We'll get to work on Monday, but tomorrow's only Sunday. Tomorrow to have a fun day for it's Saturday tonight. Yeah, the girls are out to bingo and the boys are getting stink all. We think no more of bingo on a Saturday, Saturday night. The glasses, they will tickle when our eyes begin to twinkle. And we think no more of bingo on a Saturday, Saturday night. We think no more of bingo on a Saturday, Saturday night.
Here she is as China Mary in an episode of Wyatt Earp.
They have broken the law and they must be punished.
They will be, in my way.
I cannot agree to that.
Then find them yourself.
By the 1950s, she was well past her Hollywood prime, but she wasn't alone. She was part of a tight-knit Chinese-American community in Los Angeles.
Did your father play poker with her?
Yeah, my dad used to go over and play poker. He was a teenager, you know, and he'd go over to the apartment in Santa Monica, and they'd play poker, and they'd drink.
Lisa C's grandparents and parents were friends with Anna Mae Wong.
My dad, when I called him the other day to say we were doing this, he was like, oh, yeah, you know, we used to go over there. I'd say, well, you know, what happened then? And he'd say, oh, I don't know, we were drinking so much, I don't remember. It was a fun place for him, and he'd go over with his buddies, and she always had room at the table, and they'd play poker and get drunk.
But Anna Mae's health was beginning to falter. Letters she wrote to her dear friends Carl Van Vechten, the same man who had photographed her years before, and his wife Vania Marinoff, suggest she was suffering from liver disease, perhaps cirrhosis.
My doctor insisted I come here to rest and continue treatments until a complete recovery is effected. He said the 8 pints of blood they poured into me at the hospital was just a temporary crutch to tide me over, and he wasn't going to dig me out of the grave again. I've done a great deal of thinking while laid up, and I'm going to overcome the habit of worrying all the time about things that are not worth the bother. With best love always, Anna Mae.
She was in and out of hospitals during that decade, sometimes for lengthy stays, at a time when money was tight.
We're going to fade out there. That is Mobituaries, a show I'm really enjoying, podcast. And this particular one is on Anna Mae Wong. And that is not a name I was familiar with, except that my friend Tony, who I met through the church in the beginning, Tony Chan, professor, writer, reporter, filmmaker. Anyway, he did research on her and I guess produced a documentary. And I don't know where it got to or what happened, but now suddenly it's back in the news through this latest obituary. Very, very interesting story of just the discrimination. I mean, she was Chinese American, and they would get white people and have them look Asian to play parts in films. And the Hollywood rules of the day were, she could never, even if she played opposite a white leading man, she could never kiss him. They were not allowed on screen ever to have mixed races kissing. Really? You think, oh, my God, really? That's how it was? Not that long ago? Wow. Anyway, a very interesting story. I highly recommend. And this episode in particular on Anna Mae Wong. A lot of heartbreak in it. Speaking of which, I just watched Parasite with my wife, and boy, I highly recommend it, of course, very well done, and I sure hope tonight at the Academy Awards, and I sure hope they get either Best Directing or some award. It would be a shame if they were shut out. So yeah, it is Sunday, it is February 9th, tomorrow morning, not that, you know, just over 12 hours from now. I will be checking in at the hospital. So this will be the end of this particular episode. Don't worry, I am not going to go on and whine about my condition. In fact, well, a couple of other topics. One, it was my wife's birthday yesterday, and I had, if you remember, way back in December, I found tickets for a daytime showing matinee of We Will Rock You, the musical of Songs of Queen and so on. And we went, and it was very good. Really, really enjoyed it. So glad that we actually did that. It was a painful walk for me from the train station to the Meridian Center, formerly the O'Keefe Center, formerly I don't know what it was. But anyway, and then the walk back was just agony. But we had we took the GO train and got home, and then I ordered a great big tray of sushi, sashimi, and maki. And then after that, we rented on my TV subscription, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which I had already seen and my wife hadn't, and we enjoyed that too. So it made a very nice all-around full day of activities. And then again this morning, I was up at 3:30 driving my son to the airport, and it will be the last time because 7:30 tomorrow I'm checking in, so there's no way I'm going to be driving to the airport at 3:30, to, you know, between 3:30 and 4:30. Okay, so the other thing I was thinking about, this is 50 years exactly this month since I was in Morocco, since my trip to Europe. And I should have been really focusing a little bit on that. Like, 50 years is a long time. Many of you listeners probably haven't even reached 50 yet. And here I am with memories of being a 21-year-old backpacking through Europe, hitchhiking, bus, train, boat, plane, even from Casablanca to Lisbon. That was sort of towards the end of my trip when I had to. My traveling partner just ran out of money and was getting sick. And I felt kind of obliged to help him get home. And I got him to one train station in London where his mother met me to pay me in cash the money I had borrowed. And she just had no time for me. It was quite, they were, I guess, from an old time, probably a wealthy family in the small town, the south of England. A bit hoity-toity, I guess. It seemed he had just run away. I don't even think his mother knew where he was going. Next thing you know, he's traveling with me from Greece to Morocco, and so sort of paid me off, but no invitation, no thank yous, just here's your money. That's the last I want to see of you, which, you know, I felt it, a bit of a sting. I was thinking, hey, you know, don't you owe me an invitation to your house and some meals and stuff, but no such thing. She was just, I guess, so upset with her son. So that was the end of the journey. The beginning, one-way ticket to Paris out of Montreal, $99, you know, jetons, cigarettes, and free cognac. And but within that first week, I was caging wine from people. I was sitting in outdoor cafes, and I was getting other tourists to buy me wine, and I got pretty good at it. To the point when I was in Greece, I ended up sitting crashed outside a bar, I guess a cognac bar, of some kind, you know, where they have barrels and you just taste the stuff or fill up an empty bottle or whatever. And I think I sort of passed out, and I had a French beret at the time. I had it in my lap, and next thing, clink, 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 there's money being dropped into my hat like I'm begging on the streets of Athens. And from there, my buddy Peter and I guess some others, word got out there was a Turkish freighter heading to Barcelona for about $30, I think it was $29, a Turkish freighter, and it meant steerage in the bottom. You know, I've mentioned this to some of you, but for any new listeners or people who have forgotten, you know, in a cab. So we went down to the hull of the ship with all these bunk beds, and every bed we went to claim, they'd go nix, nix, and they'd wave us off. They didn't want us in there. So we went up and complained to somebody, a purser or somebody on the freighter, and he put us in tourist cabins, and we had a fine time, like a very stylish little trip with stops in Naples and Marseille and finally Barcelona. So that was my Mediterranean cruise for $30. Anyway, yeah, it was just that time. I mean, this month exactly, February, today is the 9th, I would have been in Morocco, might have been, I don't know if I had reached Tangier by this point. If you have followed my video, you would have seen my pipe, the hash pipe that I had carved while I was in Morocco, the place where I did that first acid trip. And just prior to that, and after New Year, let's see, it was Christmas in Dubrovnik, New Year's in Athens, then this trip where I got took a train to the south from Marseille to the south of Spain, right to the crossing for Gibraltar, and traveling with my friends. We're all going together, and in the line at the exit, you know, exit Spain, enter Morocco at that point, and they turned me back, wouldn't let me in. And all my friends just went on waving and smiling, and I was stuck in no man's land, out of Morocco, out of Spain, not into Morocco. I had to just sit there, and finally took a bus, another boat, to a Spanish port, Ceuta, and which was still Spain, so I could get there, and then I had to enter Morocco overland on one of the chicken goat buses, and go the long way. But eventually caught up with my friends that night and met the people I'd already met up with, the fellow who was smuggling back 5 keys of hashish so I could buy a house. And he's the one who gave me that first little blotter of LSD. So that was another wonderful thing. So, in other words, I'm looking at my condition now, you know, going in for a knee replacement. And I have to admit, I am depressed about it, but looking back 50 years ago this time, God damn, that was a bit of a thrill. And it wasn't just, you know, your package tour of Europe. I was doing it on $5 a day. I was budgeting. I was doing it as cheap as possible. In England, you could get a bed and breakfast place for £1. And that was, an English breakfast. So you were set for the day. You didn't need lunch. And you just had to scrounge and beg your way into museums, get student cards. I think I probably had a student passport type thing, and just find ways of saving money all around Great Britain. I hitchhiked the whole time. So I feel good about that. I feel very good about that. I feel good. And that was sort of a starting point. That was the Europe trip. And then, of course, the time in Nigeria, 1980 to 82. And then the time in Japan, 1984 to 93, with a couple of years taken out in the middle. And, the moving out to Vancouver, the summer of 75, the Yukon summer. So I have all these places and marks and events that I look back on that I'm just so grateful for, as opposed to living a life waiting for retirement, saving all that money, and okay, now finally my wife and I are going to take a Mediterranean cruise, and oh, Doc tells me I can't travel. Something happened. Bad blood test results or something. No, that didn't happen. It's only now I've slowed down and I won't be getting up on the dance floor anymore. But all is well. All is well overall. So I don't know when. Well, of course I do know when. I'll podcast from you after I've had the surgery, and probably once I'm out of the hospital. I don't know if I'll podcast from there. But it's been, it's been what? I don't know. There's just lots to think about. I'm following the Democratic, debates and so on, or what I can of them. And I've become, a Pete fan, Pete supporter. And I couldn't, who knows what the hell's going to happen. And the worst case scenario, of course, is Trump is back. But you know that. I don't have to tell you about that. In fact, none of you even want to hear about fucking American politics anymore. And it's always with a caution about our own. Just watch it. Look what's happening in Alberta. And look what Ontario voted in. The Ford government. My God. So, anyway, back to the here and now. I'm in a Thompson Park looking out at the snow-covered ground. It snowed a lot. So we're back to snowland. And I've got a couple of errands to do. And then I'll just post this thing up. I don't know how many minutes I've got left, or whether I'll throw in another song or not. But I just kind of wanted to end on a more positive note. Maybe, I don't know if that came across as positive or not. Oh, yeah, I remember the other thing they were talking about. Matala, the caves of Greece. That was a huge highlight in the trip of actually... When was... That had to have been before Morocco. Yeah, going to Crete. And on Crete, of course, was this town called Matala, and it was the home of many caves, which were burial crypts from long, long ago, and the hippies had basically taken it over, and it was full of drug smugglers. People, you know, with hashish everywhere. People had picked it up in the Middle East, got there, and this was definitely a big part of the hippie trail. And if you listen to Joni Mitchell, the song from the album Blue, I guess, where Carrie, get out your keys, you know, or your mean old daddy, you know, she had enough of this town, and she mentions Madeline by name, and the Mermaid Cafe, which was still there when I was there. So, in fact, I really was in Matala just months either before or after Joni Mitchell was. I'm guessing after. There was a big central cave, and that's where she, you know, she was doing her backpacking trip through Europe herself. She was just a little older than me. And the song talks about, you know, I just love to get out of these, you know, these jeans and these, you know, the beach tar on my feet, which was true. It had, you know, washed up onto the beach, and get back to Paris and put on some fresh cologne or whatever. But singing about the let's have a round for these, you know, Greek sailors who were there. And the Mermaid Cafe was the wild, you know, and we lived in just, we had rented, I guess, for $3 for the week. Like an adobe thing. It was actually, I think it was a stall for mules or something. But they had put it in a couple of beds. I don't even know if we had mattresses. And one pipe for water. And it was simple, simple living. All you wanted to do was get high. And up in the caves, there was a fellow called Rene. And Rene was famous for his chillums. And again, I know, sorry, some of you have heard this before, but I know damn well you weren't paying attention. Rene would make a chillum and he'd go up to the cave or wherever he happened to be. And it was like, it was an event to, you know, he needed help to smoke this thing. I guess he'd put so much hash into it and be coughing. We spent the night in one of the caves, and you're right up there. It's like the side of a cliff. And you're climbing up and you're getting your way into this cave, and there was a skull for a mascot. And now the horror is, the stories went that the hippies who were moving in there actually sort of were trying to make it into a home, and were digging around and throwing bones into the water. I never saw it myself, but I know if there was a skull on display, I don't know what happened to the rest of the body. And we were in that cave and we were so, so stoned. In the dark, and we started chanting, and we were holding hands, and we were chanting. It was coming through us. I mean, we weren't, it was one of those things like, oh boy, as if we had done, you know, acid or something. It was just, we were making these weird noises, and we couldn't stop. The noises just kept coming out of us, and there was three of us, and it was kind of in a harmony. Oh, I remember it so well, because it went on a long time. And somebody had some cheese, and then he felt this weird thing in his hand, and it was a cat had got into the cave with us, and it was licking the cheese out of his hand that he was holding. It was just a bizarre experience, but one of those things that's permanently ingrained in the memory, and I could almost, you know, remember the chant. It was just one of these deep things that just came from within the body. Oh. A little more musical than that, sorry. And again, it was three of us, and it was not something we were consciously doing at all. It was happening, and it was coming through our bodies as we sat very stoned in that cave. A little bit on the edge, a little bit uncomfortable, a little bit, whoa, I think this is just a bit too much. So there you go again. That was prime time, 69, 1970, in the caves in Greece. And of course it was just after that I went back once more, and somebody had tipped off, we all blamed the American government, the CIA, whatever, for telling the Greek police to get the hippies out of there, and the Greeks might have done it on their own. It was I think at that point it was still a military government or dictatorship, and pretty sure they had just decided it was time to clear these hippies out. Everybody knew. I mean, the word was around, hey, this is where the guys are coming to chill for a while, and then somehow get that hash in their guitar cases back into the States. That's how they were doing it. So, yeah, I'll end on that note. Okay, I've probably gone over time, but what the hell, you can forgive me for that, given the circumstances. So this is Scarborough, dude. Let's see if a chicken is thawed. Oh, yeah, much better today. Sorry, that's probably not as nice a one. Do you really need the bell? I suppose you do to make it official if I've still got it. I don't know. Yep. So just hang on while we bring it in to episode number, what is it, 776, I guess. Scarborough Dude signing out. When you next hear from me, I will have a new knee, and you can be sure you're going to hear all about that.